chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Dr. Margie Worwell on the show today. Margie is a senior partner at Korn Ferry, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and a leadership coach. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Margie, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been looking so forward to this. I truly have. You and I met recently at the annual CEO forum. And when I met you, I mean, I just instantly liked you and thought, you know what? I need to spend more time with this woman. So, you know, I feel like I did what all good podcasters do. I invited you to come on the show so we can spend more time together. So thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show today.
Oh, I am just delighted that you asked me. It was an easy yes, Lisa.
Well, very good. Well, we have got so much to talk about. So Margie is married to Andrew. Andrew is with Mackenzie. You guys, I think almost 30 years, right? You guys have been married. Is that right?
Yes, 30 next October. That's right.
30 next October. You guys have got 4 kids. And I think I read this, Margie, that you had 4 kids in 5 years. Is that right?
Yeah. And no twins, may I say, just in close succession.
So you've got Lachlan, Maddie, Ben, and Matt. We did 3 kids in 4 years. So you had 1 extra than we did, but I remember those times and I think back, and we started our business. We started Technology Partners in the middle of those 3 being born. And so I did really birth 4 babies, you know, one of them was Technology Partners, but I often look back at that time and just think, wow, how do we do that? You just do, right? You just do it.
You just rise to the moment. And I should also add in, I moved country when I was 7 months pregnant with my first child, Lachlan. Then I moved state in Australia from Melbourne to Adelaide when I was 7 months pregnant with my second child, Maddie. And then I moved country from Australia to the US when Ben, with 3 kids, 3 and a half and under, was 8 weeks old. And then I had my 4th child, Matt, while I was living in Dallas, Texas. And so throw in like a couple of moves and an international move right on, just literally, we packed up our house the day after 9/11. I mean, it was one of those periods of life where it was just very intense.
Complete chaos. Oh my goodness. Well, just for our listeners, you know, Dr. Margie is a sought after speaker. She's a multi-time author. We're going to talk about that a little bit. She's a global authority on courageous leadership and human potential. And Margie, you're described by Wall Street as a global leadership authority who gets to the heart of what holds people back. And I know that we're going to be really having an insightful and rich discussion here. And most importantly, I know that your wisdom is going to help our listeners. And that is why we started the Something Extra podcast in the first place, is to help other people on their leadership journey. So tell me a little bit, you've already mentioned Australia, but I know you did not grow up in the US. You grew up in Victoria, Australia. I actually looked it up. It looks like a beautiful place, Margie, but you grew up on a small dairy farm. You're the oldest of 7. Tell us a little bit about growing up. What was that like growing up on a small dairy farm in Australia?
When you don't know anything else, you have nothing to compare it to. So growing up, I mean, everyone we knew was very working class. No one had really gone to college. My dad was a dairy farmer for 50 odd years. My mom was very much, you know, a homemaker. And it was a very simple, very, in a sense, now that I look back, organic, wholesome upbringing, in so much as there was very, very little money. Like, we never went to a restaurant my entire childhood. We never went on a holiday except to stay in what was called like a caravan park with a tent. We didn't have a lot, but there was a lot of love. And I think it built a grit and a resilience. I'm the big sister, but I'm not the oldest. I have a brother who's 18 months older. But as the big sister, and it was a fairly gendered household, the girls did the inside kind of domestic duties. The boys helped dad with, you know, all of the more physical things outside. And I think it sort of definitely helped me to become a more resilient person. But it also, for me, while my horizons didn't extend much beyond our back paddock, Lisa, there was no role models in any way that were inspiring to me as a kid that were, you know, accessible to me. But I look back and it gave me deep roots. It was a very humble upbringing, but also I had this seed of adventure. I wanted to explore the world, even though I didn't really know much of what was out there. So I think in many ways it did set me up for the life that I've since lived, which has been very global and pretty adventurous. But my parents, very, very strong Catholics, and you know, for us growing up, faith was really important. And this idea of use your gifts to make the world a better place, you know, let your light shine, whatever your gifts are. And, you know, had I left school at 16 and become a hairdresser or something, my parents wouldn't have blinked, but they were just like, just use your gifts for good, whatever that is. And I think some really core foundational values around humility and service and were really instilled from a really young age.
I absolutely love what you just said, because you said something with deep roots, the values, the character. You didn't grow up with a lot of material things, but you grew up with these amazing values, Margie. And I'm telling you, when those roots are there and they go deep, you know, when the storm comes, you're able to withstand that, right? I mean, if you've got very shallow roots, you're not going to be able to withstand what life throws at you. And even, you know, you talked about the adventures, I mean, giving you the courage, you know, then to go after those things. So you talked about being adventurous, and I was going to ask you that because I know you went to college in Australia. But then what I found so fascinating is you spent the next year solo backpacking around the world, which I think, you know, kind of goes to your adventures. What was the precipice for that? What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about the world? How did that set you up for the next thing?
You know, it was actually quite seminal in many ways. So yes, even going to college, I was the first in my family or extended family to go off to university, which meant moving to the big city 4 hours away. There wasn't residential colleges. I had to find somewhere to live through the newspaper with people that weren't even at college. So my time at college, at university, uni, as we say in Australia, was very confronting and definitely thrust me outside my comfort zone. And I had to learn to adapt. I mean, I was very unsophisticated suddenly with a lot of kids who came from far more sophisticated and affluent backgrounds. But what that did was it made me go, you know what? I can do more than I think. And it in many ways emboldened me. And by the time I graduated with a business degree, I was like, I want to see what else is out there. I know there's a whole world out beyond Australia. I'd never been on a plane. We'd never gone overseas. So yeah, I saved up money working, you know, double jobs and headed off for this year around the world. And that year, I did meet up with people I knew, you know, on my journey, but I set off on my own and I returned on my own. And it was incredibly empowering in many ways, Lisa, because I had $7,000 of traveler's checks to last me a year. Yeah, there was no mobile phone. There was no email. It was like me on my own. I would literally record messages in a tape recorder, a cassette recorder, and send them back to my mom, who would get them like a month later, 6 weeks later, by which time I'd moved on somewhere else. It really taught a lot of self-reliance. Like, it was on me. It really helped to also fine-tune my, I would say, risk radar on people, because you know, there was no call home and get a credit card or anything like that. I was like, I had to really be managing my own well-being and finances and safety and everything else. But I think it was really empowering because it taught me to be resilient, because there was a few times where I felt lonely. I had to be resourceful and to be brave too, in the sense that you know, there was constantly every day decisions to make and, you know, going off. I remember going to New York and like, I don't know New York and I don't know subways and all of those things. But in learning and kind of being thrust outside my comfort zone and choosing all the time to explore all these new places, it in many ways made me realize I'm capable of more than I think. And as I met people from different cultures, I ended up in India and Thailand as well as across Europe. It also made me realize we humans are so much more alike than we are different. And while we have different cultural, we're shaped by the environments that we grow up in, it gave me an appreciation for the human condition and what ways we're alike and how often our own worldview and our own belief about who we are and what's possible confines us. And so, you know, later on when I did a career change in my late 20s, early 30s, you know, at that time, because I then went and did a second trip across Africa and around the Middle East, it was just really expanding and broadening to my worldview and how I saw myself and how I relate to people from very different walks of life and very different cultural contexts.
How was your mom about this, Margie? Because I just think about that. You know, you were probably 22, 23, 21, something like that in your early 20s. And you took off around the world. I mean, that's just with $7,000. I'm thinking, where did you stay? Did you just stay with different people that you knew, like in these different countries? How did you navigate that?
I didn't know anyone starting out. So, I mean, I stayed in hostels and then occasionally I would meet up with some people from maybe university that were overseas I met, or when I was in the US, I backpacked around the US for 4 months, largely staying in just very cheap accommodation. You know, you're in shared rooms and a bathroom down the hallway. And then I met a bunch of, I met a lot of Germans and particularly a lot of German girls. I was 21, they were 19. And I ended up kind of, when I got to Europe, staying with people who I met while traveling around the US, which was funny. But my mom, so my parents are people with incredibly deep faith. And they also knew my personality, which is pretty independent. And like, there was no saying I couldn't go. I mean, I was going. And I just know they prayed a lot. And it's something I've done myself with my own kids. I always want to parent from faith and not fear, and to focus on the experience they're gaining and trust that they're going to navigate things and do okay. And I know for my parents, I mean, they still to this day, they pray by name for every child and now grandchildren by name every day. I just knew they were praying for me every day. Probably didn't appreciate it very much at the time that they were doing that. And I think it really helped to keep any anxiety at bay. They weren't particularly anxious. Mum was always thrilled, like three times I called her in that first 12 months, but they weren't anxious. And I think I know that myself as a parent, I would say I'm not an anxious parent. I'm like, I have faith that my kids are going to be okay. You know, I'll pray for their safety. But also there's nothing to be gained to be overly anxious, because our kids just pick up on that and then they become anxious. So that helped, I think, yes, gave me deep roots, but also strong wings. It's like to go and explore the world. And, you know, for now, for the last quarter of a century, to live around the world a lot.
That is so good. And I know that's a lot of the work that you do today, Margie, you know, is helping people be brave and faith over fear. I mean, you know, we'll talk about that. But, you know, the thing is, too, I was just thinking, you're not only adventurous, you're definitely a learner. And you continued your education. So you got your first degree there in Australia, but you went on and you got multiple subsequent degrees, marketing, psychology, master's in organizational leadership. You even have a doctor of philosophy in human development and organizational change. What led you to continue your education like that? And, you know, what was the catalyst or the precipice for changing from marketing to psychology and organizational leadership? I want to get into, you know, your career as well.
I get asked that question a lot, Lisa, and it's a really, really personal journey that led me to doing that change. So yes, I was working in marketing as an 18-year-old. I thought, that sounds glamorous. Maybe I'll work for L'Oreal and get free cosmetics. I mean, literally, that was the thought process behind it. So pretty superficial, like, it just sounded good. Then I met my husband when I was 22. We got married a couple years later. And we wanted to experience life overseas, leave Australia. And it's a lovely country. It's got a great lifestyle. But I just felt there was a whole lot more world and I wanted to experience it, but I didn't want to be the poor backpacker. I'm like, how can I actually live somewhere and earn money? We were thinking, you know, maybe Hong Kong, Shanghai, New York, Paris, Rome. We had a list of places we'd love to go. We were both like, who can get the first job overseas? He came home one day and he said, honey, think I can get a role overseas with my company. I'm like, oh, okay, fantastic. And he said, I said, where? And he goes, Papua New Guinea. And Papua New Guinea at the time was the most dangerous country outside of a war zone. Definitely wasn't in my top probably 500 countries to go and live in. But honestly, it was, what the heck? Like, let's do this. Let's just go and experience somewhere else. We'd been married a year. I think I was 26 or 7. And so it was like, let's go. And so we moved to Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea. And we ended up there nearly 3 years. And it was there that I really decided to do this change in career. I had struggled with bulimia through my teens and in my early 20s. And I thought I had put it behind me and it flared up again. And so that was one factor. I ended up doing a 12-step program. Maybe your listeners are familiar with the 12 steps of sort of AA, but it's kind of was put over to the context of food and eating and our relationship with that and how that can be addictive. And that was really powerful for me. But overlapped with that, I found myself the confidant of many people in that very intense expatriate environment who were struggling, incredibly intelligent, smart, clever, awesome people. Some of them were involved, you know, in affairs, and some of them also had eating issues, and some of them had depression and anxiety. And I found myself a confidant of a lot of people sharing some pretty vulnerable things. I had my own wisdom at that point, but I knew I had a really limited toolkit. And then I found myself also in an armed robbery at nearly, you know, 4.5 months pregnant. And I ended up losing that baby. And that was really quite traumatic for me at the time with this, you know, gun at my head. So the combination of those three different things, after I'd lost that baby at 20 weeks, my first pregnancy, I decided that following year, which was 1997, I was supposed to have this baby. I am going to go back and do psychology. Where is there maybe a hidden blessing in this? Well, this is a time I'm going to go back and study. I was already interested in it. I was already doing a lot of deep work for myself and, you know, how I ended up in this really debilitating cycle in terms of my relationship with food and self-image, etc. And I went back and did psychology part-time distance back in the day while living in PNG and then back in Australia. And that really took me, I didn't know where that was going. I didn't know if I was going to become a psychologist. I didn't know, Lisa. I went back to Melbourne. I was there for a year, had my first child, Lachlan. We moved to Adelaide, had two more children. In between it all, I had ended up with 5 miscarriages. But obviously was conceiving relatively quickly, so hence having 4 children still in that window. But then we moved to the United States in October 2001. And it was there that I realized the studies that I had, I finished them, but they weren't actually going to be recognized in the United States. And so someone had said to me, Margie, you've done consulting work, you know, in marketing. What about coaching? That seems like your kind of personality fit. And it was. And I hadn't heard of coaching. It was brand new field. And I ended up training as a coach, you know, and it had taken me on the path that I'm on today, Lisa, which is really does draw on all of these different experiences. But it was very much these personal events that sort of had me really reflect deeply and go, what am I doing with my life? Am I inspired in this marketing track? No, I wasn't. It wasn't filling me up. And psychology, while I'm not a psychologist, it definitely really was an area like, how do I support people in dealing with those internal roadblocks, the fears and the stories and the wounds that can so often cause enormous suffering and stifle our own potential to thrive and shine and contribute and make our highest point of contribution? And that's been a really guiding force for me, you know, for the last 25 years.
What a story. See, I didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of that, Margie, about you. So you just opened up a whole new can of worms, if you would, you know, because I'm just, my brain is going, but I'm just thinking it explains a lot of why you're doing what you're doing. And even the books that you've written, because you've done so much. And I was going to ask you, I mean, you talk a lot about confidence and you say purpose. So like I even wrote out when I was kind of preparing to talk to you, you know, you talk about purpose. So purpose, if you are really clear about your purpose, which you've gotten very clear, how can I help people when they are going through these things? How can I be better equipped? So you start with that, right? And then the purpose gives you then the courage to go out and try new things. And then you say, you know, when the courage is there, then your confidence comes, you know, as you get more competent. And then after that, like when you're mastering those things and you're really working in that strength zone, then that is where you have the most joy. When you're serving people, you have joy in that. You know, it's like a, it's kind of a virtuous cycle.
It is a very virtuous self-reinforcing cycle. And yes, this sense of purpose obviously took me down this other path. And then starting my business, living in Dallas, Texas, where I started literally just after my fourth child was born, I was sort of finishing up my coach training. And I didn't know anyone in America. Literally, I was a stay-at-home mom with four kids, moving around, supporting Andrew and his career. And for me, I think, you know, one of the braver things I've done besides having my fourth child was starting that business, because even my own self-identity, it's easy now to go, well, of course you could. My self-belief was really fragile. Everyone who knew me as the mom of four, along with all the other stay-at-home moms of four. And I felt really called to do this work. But how did I do that while honoring my deep calling to be a great mom? And I didn't have the role models. And now I see a lot of women out there who have multiple children and have great careers and are doing it well and honoring both of those deep values. But at the time, I didn't know people doing it. And I, if anything, there was maybe a judgment. I'm like, why are you doing this? And I know a lot of like my friend's husbands probably saw it as like some little hobby that she's got. And it wasn't it. I lacked confidence. Having a husband who has always been my biggest champion and saying, honey, you have a gift, you know, you absolutely need to be honing it and sharpening it. And, you know, I'll put the four kids to bed tonight. You go out and give your talk, you know, for zero money. But I was just doing it because it was building a skill set for me and building a business, and not with much income in the beginning at all. It's not like I had a strategic business plan, Lisa. It was more just what gives me energy? What am I pulled toward? And obviously, it's been a very organic growth, and what I'm doing now, I couldn't have imagined 20 years ago, couldn't have imagined it at all. But pursuing continually, I just felt called toward it and being brave. Like, I've got to tell you, a million times I was like, I don't know that I have what it takes to be successful in this, but I don't want to look back one day and go, what if I tried? And so that's the courage. It's like giving yourself permission not to do things brilliantly, but just to do it.
Right. Oh my goodness. You know, I probably got 8 pages left of notes here. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Margie Werwell on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Margie. So Margie, yeah, I want to continue this whole vein of talking about fear and this sort of thing, you know, and really stepping into your purpose. You've got a quote in one of your books by William James, and it says, many people never experience the full breadth of their own capabilities or realize their full potential because fear keeps them living inside the lines. There's a large gap between the life they did live and what could have been. And this is exactly what you just said. You didn't want to look back and go, what if I had have done this? And look at what you've done, Margie. My goodness. I mean, you have had so many opportunities to speak. You have coached executives. You have had an opportunity. I know you've had an opportunity to interview people like Beryl Marriott from Marriott Hotels, Richard Branson. I mean, the world has just opened up to you, probably like you could have never imagined, you know, 25 years ago, if you had not stepped out there and been brave. How does fear, and you've coached a lot of executives over the years, you know, and you've got anecdotal stories about people that had fear and then they stepped out. I mean, how have you seen this play out, and how can we reframe our fears? You know, because everybody has that emotion of fear.
And let's be clear, we shouldn't vilify it. We wouldn't be here without it. So the goal should never to be fearless, even though that word fearless gets used a lot as almost a synonym for courage. In a sense, it's a misnomer, because courage isn't the absence of fear. It is the decision to take action in its presence, to risk an outcome that we don't want in pursuit of an outcome that we want far more. And so, you know, courage to me is, that's why it's weaves through all my work, through my books. My first book title, Find Your Courage, was me finding my courage, even finding the guts to write a book. There was a little voice in my head was like, who do you think you are? You know, you went to a little one-room schoolhouse. You don't even know where the apostrophes go. How could you aspire to write a book and give myself permission to write an imperfect book? And I see all the time, while fear comes in many guises, and it's often disguised as mild-mannered self-doubt, that little voice of like, I don't know if I'm experienced enough. I don't know if I have what it takes. I could make a fool of myself. I could be rejected. You know, often that fear keeps us from taking those very actions that we are wholly capable of taking, from making a bold ask, from putting our hand up to take on a bigger role, from having a difficult conversation with an employee, with a peer, with someone we love in our family. And so to me, it's not about eradicating fear from our lives, Lisa. It's about discerning between the fears that are serving us and allowing us to grow and to learn and to thrive, and those that are stifling us. And I think the pandemic, the last few years, coupled and overlap with this 24/7 news cycle we're in, this digital news economy that really, it makes money from making us afraid. You look at the headlines. I think we've become more hypersensitive to risk, that we're constantly going, oh, that looks too scary. That looks too scary. You know, hunker down, mask up. People are very afraid. And I think many people have lost the ability to just really discern legitimate risk from perceived or, you know, risks that we need to take. And so on a kind of a macro level, you know, I think we can be afraid of the wrong things. And so part of it is reframing fear, really reframing risk, and go, what is it am I putting at risk if I don't take this risk, if I don't, this emotional risk, this, you know, if I don't take this chance? And knowing also that our brains are twice as sensitive to what could go wrong than what could go right, to what could be lost than what could be gained. So a lot of people focus all the time on the downside of risk, of taking a risk, because it's immediate, it seems dramatic, it's like, oh, I'll feel terrible. And we're not as good at stepping into the shoes of us 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. Or as I said with a friend of mine recently who's been, was offered a very, very big job that's going to be hugely demanding and challenging, I said, consult with your 100-year-old self. Step into the shoes of her and ask yourself, what would she want you to know? What would she want you to do? Because, you know, at the end of life, it's the risks that we don't take, the chances we don't take, the times we weren't brave that we regret far more than the times that we did. And so just recognizing there's a steep hidden tax we pay when we let fear sit in the driver's seat. And that drives me a lot. I remember that with my fourth child going, you know, my husband, like, will we or not, our hands were full. And I did this visualization 10 years from now, what will I think? I'm like, you know what? Open up the possibility. Not everyone gets, you know, not every time we want to have a child can we have a child. But sure enough, literally straight away, I found myself pregnant. And which told me, you know what, this was part of the plan. This, my Matthew's meant to be in the world. And I think for all of us, and working with senior executives, Lisa, people running companies, people in office, there's silent invitations every day for them to step up and be more courageous than they might feel like being. And I really think yesterday I met with General Stan McChrystal, and he is an extraordinary man, extraordinary leader who, I mean, during his time, you know, leading the US forces and NATO in Afghanistan, 150,000 people under him. So has a lot of insights on risk and courage. And we were talking about it yesterday at depth. And I was saying, you know, I feel like there's a lack of courage in many leaders today. And he agreed. And I think that's where purpose and principles are so core to our ability to lead well. It's like, what is the right thing to do here? And often it's not the easy or comfortable or necessarily expedient thing in the short term. But the more we can be guided by those values and a sense of purpose, Lisa, the more it galvanizes our courage to step up and sometimes do the very things that little voice in the back of our head is saying, don't do it.
Right. Oh my goodness, Margie, I just had this conversation earlier today, and it's like the courage to do the right thing instead of succumbing to the voices that are telling you something else, you know? And sometimes, yeah, I mean, that takes a lot of courage. But I also think, as you were talking, the risk, the opportunity cost of not stepping out and being brave, the world is going to miss something that you had to offer. I mean, I think about you and I think about the people, Margie, that you have impacted with your books, the people that you have impacted with your keynotes and your coaching. Those people would not have had, you know, they would not have had that if you had not made that decision to be brave. You know, so the world is missing out too when we don't step out and follow our calling.
And I just, on that, Lisa, thank you. But I would say this, we don't even know what we miss out on when we aren't brave. We can never know the window that didn't open, the relationship that wasn't built, the opportunity that didn't come our way because we didn't share with someone what we wanted. We didn't put ourselves out there. And, you know, that saying, fortune favors the brave, there's a deep, deep truth to it. And I think I should say, not everything we do when we're brave lands perfectly. Sometimes things don't work out. It doesn't get the result we want. But I think we never have to ask ourselves, what if? And we still learn and we still grow. And it's why Daniel Gilbert from Harvard, he's a psychologist, he said our psychological immune system can justify more easily an excess of courage than an excess of cowardice. Because when we are courageous, we learn and grow and expand who we are as humans. And when we stick with the safety and familiarity of the status quo, we just stay there in that place. We haven't grown and we haven't learned. We don't know what we missed out on.
Oh, goodness gracious. I tell you what, here's what I've decided in my mind, though, as you and I are talking. This podcast needed to be like three parts or 3 hours long or something because there's just so much here. But I do want to dig into one of your books. I mean, you've written lots of books, Margie, and I would encourage our listeners to go out and look Dr. Margie Worrell, Warrell. We'll have everything in the show notes, but you've got multiple books. You've been a Forbes contributor. I've read a lot of your articles, you know, that you've been a Forbes contributor, lots of articles out there by Margie, but just listeners go out. But your books are You've Got This, A Life-Changing Power, Trusting Yourself, Make Your Mark, Brave, Stop Playing Safe, How to Be Braver in Your Work, Leadership in Life, Find Your Courage. I mean, you've got lots of books out there, best-selling books, but the one that I really want to dig in today is You've Got This. And, you know, I was thinking about you and all the different roles that you played, Margie, and I bet you had to tell yourself a lot, You've Got This. I was thinking, I bet she told herself, You've Got This, Margie, You've Got This. But I love this book. You've got it structured into three different parts, the daring, the growing, and the becoming. And I love what you said. You know, we're not human beings. We're human becomings. We're becoming, you know, and if we frame that way, listen, we're all on a journey and we're becoming. You are hopefully not the person today that you were a year ago. You know, let's just be moving forward. The goal here is not perfection. You know, the goal is to continue to grow and progress, right? We're not going to be able to cover the whole book, obviously. I loved in part two, you've got chapter four of part two. It's called Embrace Your Fallibility. The subtitle is Get Off Your Own Back, Forgive Your Failings. And I absolutely laughed my head off. You told the story about you being a keynote speaker. Can you just, let's add a little levity here because I bet you this will give our listeners a big chuckle too.
That story, that book, I was finishing the book when that happened and I just had to switch out the opening of that chapter and insert that story in as it was about to go to the publishers. I don't know how to share this story in a short way because I think I still blush thinking about it. But I had landed in Nashville from New York to speak at a big tech conference. I was doing the opening keynote the next morning. And I was also finishing my PhD. I was finishing that book. I was living in Singapore. I had kids in the US. You know, life was full and busy. And I got to the hotel and I was staying on the 20th floor. It was the executive level. Most of the people at the hotel were there for the conference, for the events the previous day. And I ordered some lunch and was doing some work. And I had my salad and I left the little fruit cup and I put the tray outside the door. I was doing more work. I thought, you know, I'm going to have a little nap, just a 20-minute nap. And hopefully not sharing too much information here, but I took off my pants. I had underpants on. I had a t-shirt on and that's all. And I had a little nap. And when I got up, I thought, I'm just going to have that fruit cup. Oh, the fork and spoon must be just on the, see if that tray's there. I put my head out the door to grab it, had my foot up behind me to keep the door open and the door closed. And I'm stuck in the hallway in a t-shirt, no bra, and underpants, no pants, and no key. And I'm, oh my gosh, how do I get back in? I'm like, I'm literally going, oh, I can't believe what just happened has happened. And I kind of am ducking down thinking everyone is walking past me. Oh, there are all these men in their jackets and suits walking past me. This is 2019, pre-COVID. I'm like, I don't want them to see me because I'm up on stage. I'm the keynote speaker tomorrow. And by about the fourth person who went past and I'm cupping my head down so no one will recognize me going, oh my gosh, I just thought I have to just bite the bullet. I said, excuse me, sir, would you be able to help me? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, I don't have my key and I need to get back in the room. And he said, you don't have your key? I'm like, no. And I also don't have pants. And he said, okay. Anyway, he disappeared. He came back and he handed me his robe. And I said, thank you so much. What's your name? He said, George. So I wait. He said, I'll go off and get security. About 5 minutes later, someone comes, lets me in. The next morning I go up, I'm like, do I share this story on the stage? I don't know how many people recognize me. I don't know if George is at the conference. I get up and I start my keynote with this story. And I bought the robe and I held it up and I said, and George, if you're out there in the audience, I want to give you the Golden Robe Award for chivalry and just helping me out of the most embarrassing situation. And then there was a book signing afterwards, Lisa, and I'm signing books and people are getting photos and this man walks up. And he said, hi, I'm George. I'd like my robe back. And he said, but I thought you were a country music singer and I thought you maybe were on drugs. I don't know why. Maybe I was sleepy. He said, I just thought, who is this person? When I first caught, he's like, he thought, I don't know. Who is this crazy person? Anyway, that's the story that ended up in the front of the book. And it was really embarrassing.
It's a perfect story, though, for that chapter, Embrace Your Fallibility. Sometimes I think just being able to laugh at ourselves, Margie, it's a wonderful quality, right, to have. And I'm not there yet. I can't always do that, but I try to think about, you know, hey, listen, I am not perfect. And I'll be the first to admit it.
And you know what, though? I didn't know, should I share this story? I'm there as a keynote speaker. I'm supposed to, you know, have my act together. And clearly I was locked out of my room upstairs, you know, with half semi-clad. And I shared it and I've had so many people come up to me and go, oh my goodness, thank you. But so many people have since shared in reading that chapter and other things that I've shared. And even today, just sharing with you, I'm having had an eating disorder. You know, I feel really strongly that when we share our own struggles, and our sorrows and our vulnerability, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm still figuring it out. I haven't got it figured out. It creates a space in relationships for people to go, I'm struggling too, maybe with something else, and to be vulnerable. And we forge so much more meaningful connection with people through our vulnerability, not through our perfection and posturing. And we live in a world that does continually sort of pressure us to put this face forward of I've got it all together. And I think it's why as I get older and maybe a little more comfortable with my own humanity, I almost feel a sense of responsibility to share with people my rough edges and the things that about me that aren't perfect, because it opens up a conversational space sometimes for me to ultimately support someone else through their struggle. Maybe they're going through a terrible time with their marriage. Maybe they've got a child or they're dealing with something that would be embarrassing, or there's a shame and our secrets make us sick. And I think that the more we can be real with people and just share what's going on for us, the raw truth of our lives, the more it enables us to be a positive force in the lives of other people.
Yeah, that is so good, Margie. I just read an article recently from Richard Branson. And he said the one quality, there's one word that is the difference between a great leader and a good leader. And the word is vulnerability. You know, that posturing and thinking you have it all together. I mean, you're not relatable. You're not approachable. And let's face it, we all have stuff because we're human. I mean, oh my goodness, there's so much more I want to talk about. I'll tell you this. See, you've already impacted me, Margie, because, you know, on page 70 of You've Got This, you've got what you appreciate appreciates. So I'll just give you a little thing where you influenced my thinking. We do in our family, in the Nichols family, every night we do a gratitude circle. And everybody goes around the circle and says what they're grateful for that day. But I was thinking about what you put here, what you appreciate appreciates. And so this week, just this last week, I said, I want to add a new element to that gratitude circle. Every day, I want to make a mental note about what I appreciate about what somebody did or, you know, a behavior that I saw, you know. So my grandson, just Allie is our 27-year-old. She has difficulty. She has Down syndrome. She has difficulty tying her shoe. And so one day her shoe was untied and he just, without anyone asking him, bent down and tied her shoe, you know, since it's Sawyer. I was so appreciative of how sweet and kind you were to Allie, you know, to notice that her shoe was untied, you know, so I've added that, I've incorporated that. So see, Margie, you've already impacted me too, but there's just so much. Chapter 6 is using your gifts. Trusting your talents, playing to your strengths. You know, said in here, research from Gallup found that people who use their strengths are 3 times more likely to report an excellent quality of life. And of course, that is what something extra. You know, I believe we've all been given strengths and gifts, and we are to steward those and we are to use those to make the world a better place. Yeah, I have to ask you one more question, then we'll talk about something extra before we close out here. But, you know, we've already talked a little bit about your venturesome spirit, you know, you definitely backpacking around the world solo, but you have swam with piranhas in the Amazon. That's crazy. You cycled across Beijing. You stayed in a Palestinian refugee camp, but you had a very recent adventure with your family where you guys summited Kilimanjaro. How was that, Margie? And what, you know, I was just thinking, my goodness, here's what you're doing. I mean, you're obviously making memories with your family, but you're also practicing bravery and courage, and you are modeling that for your children. You know, how was that experience? And what did you guys learn about from that?
It was an incredibly rich experience. I'm so glad we did it too, because it was a few years ago now, and it's, as my kids are getting older, it's harder to round them all up. But my son Ben actually did this PowerPoint presentation. My husband was like, wouldn't it be cool to do a safari? And Ben's like, yeah, but wouldn't it be cool to climb to the rooftop of Africa? He put this PowerPoint together, did the soundtrack of Rocky to it. And in the end, I'm like, yes, let's do it. And then I set about organizing the logistics. And a few people said, you know, at the time our 4 kids were, there were 4 teenagers. And people said, you know, it's not easy to get up there. A lot of people don't get there. The younger you are, the harder it is for your body to adapt to the altitude. And we set out, even though we weren't quite sure if we could make it. But it was this vision of, wouldn't this be cool to do this to mark my husband Andrew's 50th birthday? That was the big impetus behind doing this to mark Dad's birthday. And the first few days weren't that hard to get to the base camp, but base camp's at 18,000 feet, similar to the Everest base camp, and the air is thin. And then on summit day, it was grueling. It was 9 extremely grueling hours, nauseous. I mean, I threw up. Most of us threw up. It was really hard. And it was probably one of the toughest, most grueling days physically of my life. But there were a lot of great lessons. And one of them, Lisa, was that we can do so much more together than we can alone. I would have given up, but it was like, I didn't want to be the weak link. I didn't want to say, oh, it's just too hard. This is too grueling. And so we were all lifting each other up, literally psychologically and a few times physically, going, yes, you can do it. One more step. But also how much we can underestimate ourselves and what we're capable of. And because we were so committed to getting to the top and we dug deep. And we really dug deep. And I think for all of us, when we're really clear about something we really want to achieve, we will go the extra mile. We will put in that extra effort in a moment where you go, I can't be bothered. But we just dig deep to ourselves and discover grit and resilience and resourcefulness that we might otherwise not get to know. So yeah, I'll be forever glad that we went the extra mile and climbed that mountain, Lisa. It was a really awesome thing. it's a family.
So wonderful. Well, tell me, Margie, we're closing out here, but you know, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe? I think I might know where this is going, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What do you believe is the something extra, or I'll give you extras, that every leader needs?
Clearly, I believe they need courage and that willingness to risk failing and falling short and losing face. But I also think they need to have, and this is particularly for women, and that is self-compassion, to be kind to ourselves in the moments that we fall short of being the person that we aspire to be. And we will all fall short of being that person that we aspire to be, whether it's courageous or, you know, just clever in how we're doing things, whatever, strategic, putting in the planning, etc. And so I think to extend grace to ourselves in those moments that we fall short, but then, because we know from actually research, Lisa, when we can be kind to ourselves when we fall short, it actually helps us pick ourselves up quicker and move forward faster with the learning versus, you know, beating ourselves up because we didn't get it right. So, yeah, I would say courage and self-compassion are vital, though, of course, you know, there are many other attributes that are really essential for leaders. But today, given the uncertainty of the world, given the disruption and volatility and the need for leaders to make decisions despite the fog of what lays ahead and the lack of predictability, I think leaders who are really instilled with courage are also able to create environments around them that foster learning and innovation and candid conversations that serve all the stakeholders of their organization.
Yeah, very good. I don't think I've had anyone in over 200 episodes say self-compassion, Margie. So that's a new one. So thank you so much. This has been so delightful for me. I wish I could just do this all day long with you, but we won't do that to our listeners. But thank you again so much. I know how busy you are. So I appreciate you taking the time to be on the Something Extra podcast.
And I appreciate you for doing this podcast, inviting me on and being the bright shining light that you are in the world, Lisa. I'm just really feel very grateful and blessed to know you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.